With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, everyone. As the Eagles get ready to take on the Dallas Cowboys, we're going to do a little Journey to Draft action here presented by AAA. Chris McPherson joined alongside all 22 aficionado, lover of college football and the NFL draft process, none other than Fran Duffy, man of many podcasts.
Man of many words.
Yes, indeed.
Writing, among them, T for Temple U.
Impressive win. Was interested to see on this separation Saturday, not that Temple played in one of those big-time games, but intrigued to see how they would come back against SMU, a team with just one win on the season. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, early in the week, Matt Rhule came out and said that he was a little bit worried about his team and didn't feel like they had recovered. I think that was Wednesday. He came out and said that he didn't feel like they had recovered yet from the loss. A lot of guys were banged up. He didn't feel like they had practiced well enough. Obviously, that, you know, seems to have gotten a little bit of fire under them, because they came out, they scored 60 points on Friday night.
Certainly.
Against SMU, scored 39 in the second half, and they've been a second half team throughout the course of the season. But really good win, and you have to win games like that, especially after a tough loss.
What was something I found quite intriguing and fascinating was in the third quarter, I came in, I turned the game on late in the first half, probably just right as they went to halftime, up 21-17, and everyone wondered how would Temple do in the second half, and Ventel Bryant, first play there, goes for the 75-yard touchdown, just like that, it's 28-17, but he did a little celebration in the back of the end zone. He did the kind of kicking the ball away type thing, sort of like, all right, let's get SMU out of here, and Coach Rhule was livid, and everyone's kind of like, Coach Rhule, your guy just scored you a 75-yard touchdown. Get the offense going. He had him go do up-downs along the sideline.
It's good stuff.
You know, he's not messing around.
No, he's very much a guy that requires accountability from his players, and something like that, it was good to see, just to keep those guys level-headed and trust the process.
All right. So as part of the process here on the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA, we're going to get into a little draft buzz. We'll do our pick six, and in light of separation Saturday, I guess you can consider this Fallout Sunday, so to speak, players who could be spoilers in the college football playoff process down the stretch, and then we'll get into your questions in our draft mailbag. Thank you very much for those of you who have subscribed. If you have not, please done so, and make sure to rate and comment and let us know what you want to hear on future podcasts. So that's our introduction. Now let's delve into Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, Fran, so I figure we'll get things started with your Saturday scouting column. It's a must-read. I try to get up as early as I can every Saturday morning on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. I think passed out in the editing process probably a little before midnight, because sometimes I'm like, look, if I can get up there at midnight, it's Saturday, it's out of the way. Fans who are up early, you know, just get home from a fun Friday night. You know, you want to check the app, see what's out there. I try to have it on there.
That's why you're the best, because you're up editing at midnight on a Friday
but
night.
But I slacked a little bit and didn't get up till, I think, because I even said all to myself, right, I said, Saturday scouts got to get up early, just because by noon, the matchups are underway. So it's got that, you know, tight shelf life there. So you got to make sure to take advantage of
sure,
it.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. No, all it right. it was a great week of matchups.
Certainly. So your number one matchup here was Cardale Jones took over as a starting quarterback for Ohio State after JT Barrett was suspended for driving under the influence, and rightfully so, and I'm shocked that he's not actually just kicked off the team altogether, but that's a discussion for a different day. Cardale Jones steps back into the starting role, the one that he had at the beginning of the season. He threw for 187 yards and a touchdown, and Ohio State, they kept their number one spot, at least in the AP poll or the coaches.
Coaches poll.
Coaches are number one. Clemson is number one now in the AP. So
you wonder how much that was affected by the playoff rankings coming. Like, if the playoff rankings had come out this week, would Clemson have gotten the number one spot?
True.
In the AP poll? That would have been interesting.
That would have been interesting to see. But nonetheless, the Buckeyes remain undefeated with a 28-14 win over Minnesota. Very, very tough defense. And as you point out in the column, This was a team that was going to be inspired by their coach, Jerry Kill, who had to resign a couple of weeks ago due to health issues. You thought that they would put up a good fight, but Ohio State, as they've done all year, they come out with the win.
Yeah, and it wasn't pretty. And there were times late in the game where you kind of thought Minnesota had a chance here, but as the game wore on, Ohio State was able to pull away. Cardale Jones had a long touchdown run later in the game. You mentioned that he had, you know, one touchdown throwing as well. You know, look, the physical tools have never been the question with Cardale Jones. It's just been, can he put it all together from a quarterback perspective? You know, can he show the decision making, the pocket poise, the ability to work with bodies around him? That has been always been the question with Cardale Jones. The erratic play is what got him benched in the first place. I'll be interested to see what Urban Meyer decides to do with that position moving forward.
I wonder how much did the aftermath of the national championship combined with the will he or won't he declare for the draft, wonder how much that just weighed on him. I wonder if that carried over to the entire offseason. And then not being declared the starter from the jump, you know, they do move Braxton Miller kind of out of the quarterback picture to make him a wide receiver. So it's sort of a two-man picture at quarterback, but still not being rewarded as being the guy. And then having those distractions of the does he declare or not, I wonder if that weighed on him and affected his early season performance.
Yeah, I mean, look, after the three-game sample size last year, there were questions about him because you saw the tools, and Ezekiel Elliott carried that offense, and Cardale Jones was able to make plays when he needed to over that three-game stretch where they won the national championship. But there were some questions, and that's why a lot of people were wondering, should he just declare? Because, you know, since it was a small sample size, will his stock only go down by coming back? Would he have gotten a chance to go, you know, he could potentially have been the third quarterback overall. I would imagine that if he declared for the draft this year that he would not be the third quarterback draft in the class. So it'll be interesting to see what his status will be moving forward, whether he decides to declare, if he decides to stay at Ohio State for another year, or if he decides to transfer out. It'll be interesting to see what ends up happening here with his story.
Interesting you say that. Obviously, his performance, you would say no, but you have to wonder if teams are going to be intrigued by that three-game sample size from the previous year and say, there's not really a lockdown number one guy this year, even though Adam Kaplan on Twitter put out that Paxton Lynch is a surefire top 10 pick.
I think he's going to be.
So we will see. Yeah. So maybe you have that, but after him, I think that's where there'll be a lot of questions.
Well, you know, I think that when you look at the two quarterback classes, though, when you look at this year's and last year's, and we don't know who exactly is going to come out.
Of course.
I think there's assumptions that Paxton Lynch is going to declare. There's assumptions that Jared Goff is going to declare. There's assumptions that Hackenberg is going to declare. So you insert those three guys. We don't know about everybody else. But if you just take those three, I think this is a pretty good quarterback class. You know, in terms of, you know, maybe there's not that guy. There's no Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota that people are saying, oh, yeah, he's definitely number one, at least at this stage.
Of course.
You know, I think overall this is a pretty good group. I mean, Carson Wentz from North Dakota State is a guy. The more I've watched this kid, when I watched him over the summer looking back to last year, I thought, okay, you know, he's like a nice developmental player. You know, I liked what I saw. Solid day three, like a round four, round five pick. I'll tell you what, I watched the limited action that he played in this year because he broke his wrist a few weeks back. That kid looks like he could be a pretty high pick in the draft. And that's from North Dakota State, and you got to, you know, take it with a grain of salt. He did some things that were really, really impressive. So I'm excited to see what he does moving forward. But overall, like I said, I think this is a pretty good group of quarterbacks.
And we're not talking about Connor Cook, Cody Kessler.
Right. Yep.
So there's some other names to throw into
no
the
question.
Mix. All right, so number two, I'm surprised you didn't make this your number one matchup because it's your favorite game of the year.
It is.
LSU, Alabama, Leonard Fournette, the front runner for the Heisman coming into this game, seemed like he could do no wrong against the 1-on-1 matchup that you wanted to see was Alabama's Reggie Ragland. And as we all know, Alabama dominated. Fournette was kept in check. Derrick Henry turned out to be the running back of the day, 210 yards on the ground and three touchdowns, while Fournette just 31 yards on 19 carries.
I will say, and I wonder what people's thoughts are on this, if the two running backs had switched sidelines and you put Fournette in an Alabama uniform and put Henry in an LSU uniform, what the numbers would have looked like. But the Alabama defensive front just completely dominated LSU's offensive line. And, you know, going into the game, I would have thought that it would have been in Alabama's favor. It was tipped over the scales, throw the scale out the door, it's broken, like game over. Those guys just dominate, whether it was Jerron Reed, A'shaun Robinson, Darren Lake made some plays, Reggie Ragland, Reuben Foster. I mean, everybody in that front seven made plays for Alabama, and LSU just couldn't get anything going. So often, Leonard Fournette was getting hit. you know, within a yard of the backfield, and, you know, whether or not it was behind the line of scrimmage, at the line of scrimmage, or, you know, within a yard after, he was, you know, hitting first and second contact within that range. It's really tough to operate if you're a running back, regardless of how talented you are in those kind of circumstances.
So both of these teams were, at the time, in the college football playoffs top four. LSU was number two coming to this game, but Alabama gets a 30-16 victory. Third matchup, number one in the CFP coming to this week, Clemson Tigers. Running back Wayne Gallman is a player you wanted to watch, going against Florida State Seminoles linebacker Terrence Smith, and Clemson getting the victory. Gallman, over 100 yards on the ground, wasn't the leading rusher for his team. Deshaun Watson, the quarterback, had 107 yards rushing, but nonetheless, the Tigers get over a hump and get that all-important win to clinch the division and secure a spot in the ACC title game.
Yep, no question. And Gallman sealed it, really, with his touchdown run late in the fourth quarter. Look, he's a really fun guy to watch because he's a really competitive runner. He's a really angry runner. And it's I was talking actually with a guy that covers Clemson this past week on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. He said, you know, when defenders come to tackle him, it's almost like he's insulted that they want to try and tackle him. He's just such an angry runner, and that showed up again this past week. I think that my big question with him coming into the year, and I haven't fully studied him off this season, but coming into the year, my question was, what kind of vision did he have? Does it, you know, as a sophomore running back a year ago, coming into this year, I'll be interested to dig more into him, but really interesting just because of his ability to break tackles, refusing to go down on first contact. He's an interesting guy to watch.
All right, so the fourth matchup, the best senior receiver in the country, according to one Fran Duffy, Tyler Boyd of Pittsburgh, broke the school's all-time receiving record previously held by Antonio Bryant. However, he had just 42 yards and three catches on the day as Notre Dame came away with the 42-30 win over the Panthers. And of course, everyone would figure you put Laquon Treadwell. Megaquan is actually one nickname I saw of his over the weekend. I thought it was very witty there. But you like Boyd.
I do.
Than Quan.
I like Boyd. Boyd's a true junior, a guy that's really, really good at going up and getting the football. I think he's a good route runner. He's a good athlete and shows the ability to get vertical. He is the only factor in that Pitt offense right now because they lost James Conner in the first week of the year to a knee injury, and so he has become the focal point. A lot of people have questioned his yards per catch and, you know, oh, well, you know, it's right or it's below 10 yards. Look, they have tried to find a lot of different ways to try and get him the ball just because they don't have much else going on. So a lot of speed sweeps, a lot of carries out of the backfield, the screen game, lots of different routes to try and just get him the ball as quickly as possible. And since they don't have much around him, defenses are able to hone in on him. But a guy that can win in a number of different ways, I really like him just because, you know, he can win in all those different areas. You compare him to a Treadwell, a Corey Coleman from Baylor. I'll take Tyler Boyd over both those guys now just because of his ability to win in all areas. I'm a big Tyler Boyd fan.
Very interesting. It'll be interesting to see, does his name kind of get into that conversation? Because everyone is obsessed right now with Coleman especially.
Sure.
And we'll delve into some of his numbers a little bit later here in the podcast. Let's transition to some of the other matchups around the AP Top 25 from Saturday. Michigan State, they were number 7 in the college football playoff standings, prime position to run the table. They were still undefeated coming into this week. However, they got stunned 39-38 by unranked Nebraska. Controversial touchdown late in the game. The receiver ran out of bounds and came back in. It was declared that he was forced out, and that's why he was allowed to reestablish position. But nonetheless, that was Brandon Riley with that game-winning touchdown. Connor Cook had one last chance at the end, but threw the ball out of bounds as time expired, and the Spartans go down 39-38.
Yeah, I got a chance to watch the end of the game, but just, you know, it's interesting because a lot of people have kind of been sleeping on Michigan State just because, look, they should have, for all intents and purposes, they should have lost that game against Michigan.
Yes.
Connor Cook hasn't really wowed a ton of people this year, even though, you know, every time I watch him, and he doesn't have the most outstanding physical tools, he continues to just make plays that are really, really impressive from the pocket. Even, you know, again, I just switched over for that final drive when they, you know, Michigan State had the ball with a chance to win the game. That throw before that final play where he threw it out of bounds, he did a great job working in the pocket and delivering the football with bodies around him. And just the little things like that, he does really well. We'll talk a little bit about Cook moving forward, but a guy that's really, really interesting just because he's got that experience working in the pocket and working with bodies around him.
All right, so another upset here. Texas Christian gets stunned by undefeated Oklahoma State. A lot of people think that the Cowboys are a team that have been overlooked to this point in the year. A dominating 49-29 victory. Trevon Boykin threw for 445 yards. He ran for another 73 yards. However, he was undone by a career-high 4 interceptions. Another note from this game, Josh Doctson, one of the best receivers in the country, left the game with a wrist injury.
Yeah, and that's going to be a big loss for them, no question about it, regardless of how much they throw the ball.
Is there an update on his stats?
I haven't seen anything yet, but regardless, you know, obviously one of the most talented receivers in the country, especially when it comes to going up and winning at the catch point. Just a really impressive guy. But look, defense catches up with them. The quarterback, we have talked about in the past, I'm not sure what kind of pro prospect Boykin is at this point at the quarterback position, and that caught up with them as well. We'll see. Look, they still have a lot of football to play here because of this Big 12. All these teams now at the top of this conference all play each other in the next 2 weeks. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out.
But Oklahoma State, they still have Baylor and Oklahoma after Iowa State this upcoming week. So if they can run the table,
they'll probably be in.
They'll be in. Yeah. I would have to be in.
I would think so. I would think so.
Especially with how well Oklahoma's playing.
With wins over TCU and Oklahoma and Baylor, they'd probably be in.
They'll be in there. Next up here, Memphis, one of the undefeated teams. We talked about Paxton Lynch as one of the top quarterbacks in the country. They go down from the ranks of the unbeatens, losing to Navy 45-20. Lynch threw for 305 yards, his second interception of the entire year. Was following this game on Twitter. Some of the reviews mixed of his performance early on in the very least. But Navy, look, Memphis had an outstanding defense coming to this game. About three times as many yards allowed as typically do from this attack that's so tough to defend when you don't see it week in and week out. So, but your thoughts on Lynch and his performance in the game?
Well, you know, just I didn't get a chance to study Lynch in the game and didn't watch much of it. But, you know, the one thing I will say is that Lynch has got the ability to win from the pocket and outside the pocket because of his feet. And when you go against, you mentioned it, this Navy offense, this triple option attack, if you're not used to going up against it, and this is Navy's first year in the AAC, so Memphis, from my knowledge, hasn't played them lately, so I'm not sure how much experience they had. And when you're playing the midseason after a couple big games, you have, you know, it's wedged in the middle of your conference action, it's tough to prepare for it. I've always said that Navy, you know, you can throw Army in there as well, although Navy has always been executing at a much higher level in this offense. Navy at any point can beat anyone in the country, and they could lose to any team in the country, because it comes down to execution on defense. If you can do if everyone does their 1/11th, everyone does their job defensively, you can contain that rushing attack. Keenan Reynolds has been exceptionally productive for them at the quarterback position, throwing and running the football. But you know, it's a big win, and Navy's now ranked for the first time in a long time at number 23, I believe.
There are only two losses, I believe, in the last 15 contests, if I'm correct, have come to Notre Dame, including their only loss to this season. So very, very impressive team.
Very much, yes.
To say the very least. We're starting to get to that point in the year where the All-Star Game invites and acceptances are starting to go out and come in. And the East-West Shrine Game, the first game on the All-Star Circuit, is actually first, or is the Collegiate Bowl, the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl, first?
The NFLPA game is actually the same time. It's the same week. Time. And there are some other smaller games leading up to those games, too. But that's the first big one, for sure, that week of the NFLPA and East-West.
All right, so a couple of players who you noted here, Fran, who have accepted the invites at this point. Let's start with a pair of Utah defenders, Jason Fanica, 34 tackles, 6.5 for loss, 2.5 sacks on the season. And safety Tevin Carter, third on the team with 45 tackles, 3.5 for loss, and 3 pass breakups.
Yeah, let's start with Fanica. And this kid is going to be interesting because, you know, just if you look at it from a case study standpoint, he doesn't have the ideal body type. He's not an explosive athlete. He just doesn't look the part. But all he does is fly around the field and make plays. He uses his hands really well. He's a power and leverage type of player. He's got position versatility, was a linebacker for them last year, now plays as the right defensive end. I'm fascinated by where he'll end up being drafted because I think he can be used in a number of different ways. He just doesn't have that body type. And so, you know, you look at what he can be, you know, is he a stand-up 3-4 outside linebacker? Is he a defensive end? I'm intrigued to see where he'll end up. Tevin Carter, 6'1", 222 pounds, sixth-year safety. He's got his moments. You know, he's got good size. I think he's got a pretty good burst. He's a former wide receiver, so you like the ball skills and the ability to play the ball in the air. I haven't seen that yet from the corner or the safety position, but he's got that in his toolbox there. The problem with him is that his eyes are too often in the wrong place. A lot of bad angles coming downhill, some blown assignments in coverage. They very rarely ask him to play single high. So you got to wonder, are they worried about his range, you know, playing hash to hash? I'm very excited to see what his, you know, what his draft status will be moving forward, because from the two games I watched, I was a little bit more down than up on Carter. So look, it'll be a good opportunity for him going down there. Has very limited college football experience, only playing 2 years at Utah. Missed most of the season last year after a groin injury after he started his career at Cal. So interesting guy there in Tevin Carter.
What would be the biggest difference between he and second-round pick Eric Rowe for the Eagles from this past season?
Athleticism, for sure. And, you know, I didn't see a guy that had great transition quickness in Carter. I thought Rowe was much more disciplined with his eyes as well. So, you know, I think on a lot of the little things, Rowe is much further along, and he's got more of a coverage ability. This guy, he gave up a lot of catches in man coverage just in the two games I watched, and I watched him against Cal and against Michigan in week one, and you know, just gave up way too many, especially in that Cal game, a lot of big plays in man coverage, which some came against receivers, one came against the tight end. You just can't have that. So, and there were also some close calls too in zone coverage as a too high safety, where his eyes were just in the wrong place. Someone ran a double move on him, and he's just lucky that Jared Goff couldn't unleash the football because of pressure up front.
All right, let's go to Illinois wide receiver Geronimo Allison.
Yeah.
I won't play on the name too much, but on the season, Allison has 756 receiving yards on 56 catches and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, and coming into the week, I don't know if it held up after this week, but I'm pretty sure he was the Big Ten's leading receiver coming into the week. But big kid, his biggest positive is his ability to just run through press coverage. He's very strong, can run through contact early in the down, and he's got great size, great strength, made a lot of big plays where, you know, corners were unable to disrupt him at the line of scrimmage and just ran through contact. But my big question with him, he's not a great athlete. He doesn't have great long speed. And I didn't think that he had natural ball skills either. I thought he fought the ball a little bit. So, you know, for his right now, I think that, you know, through two games of watching him, I think he's a size prospect. He's just one of those guys. Okay, he's a big body. What can you do?
How big are we looking at?
He's 6'4", 220, I believe. Okay. So, I mean, he's got legitimate size. But I think he's got a ways to go as a route runner. And, again, I think that he fought the ball a little bit. So I'm excited to see him in person and see how he looks when we go down there to the Shrine game.
All right, the last name on this list, we're going to do a little FCS action here, and we have Northern Iowa corner DeAndre Hall.
Yes, and a guy that I was really impressed with. You know, he's got outstanding size. He's 6'1", 189, and his arms look incredibly long, and just the ability to disrupt early in the down and the down in press coverage. You know, he's not a great athlete, and I didn't have a sense of his ball skills just yet. But you know, watching two games of his, I felt really certain that some teams are going to look at him and be really intrigued. You know, you look at Seattle, Atlanta with the scheme that they've got down there. I think that our staff, you know, would be interested in as well, just because he's got that size. He's not an outstanding athlete, doesn't have outstanding speed, but when he's able to stay on top of receivers, and I thought he did that in the two games that I watched. I watched him against North Dakota State and Carson Wentz, and then I watched him against Iowa State against the FBS competition, and he didn't look out of place. I think that he's got the ability to hang in man coverage as long as he plays good technique, and that was the big thing. I'm excited to watch him. I know he's been pretty productive. In the two games that I watched, he didn't have any picks, but I know he's been pretty productive on the year.
5 interceptions, 2 return for touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm excited to dig deeper into him. And then I'm actually going to spring one more on you.
Okay.
I actually went and I watched the tackle from Washington State right before the show.
Okay.
Who also went, and I was blown away by this kid. You know, Joe Dahl from Washington State, 6'5", 310 pounds. I came in not really expecting much. I left really impressed. You know, he's got the build of a guard. I think his feet are good enough to stick a tackle, though. I was really impressed with his movement. He's got the ability to mirror in pass protection. He's got really good athleticism, plays with a chip on his shoulder. I was really impressed, too, with his ability to stay, you know, consistently stay in good position in pass protection, even when he had to reach, because they play with those wide splits along the offensive line. You know, sometimes the guard would be like 8 feet away, you know, and he'll pass that and have to reach a defensive tackle that's, you know, over the guard, and he's able to get there. He's got really good feet. Now, we'll see what his arm length is and things like that, and whether or not he'll have the build for a tackle, but he's got the play demeanor of a guard. He kind of reminded me a little bit of Joe Bitonio, who went in the second round of the Cleveland Browns, was all rookie team last year. I really liked this kid. I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up getting a Senior Bowl invite, because I saw a lot. You know, I think this kid could be pretty good.
All right, so looking through some other notes, found the column, Statistically Speaking, that John Taylor does for College Football Talk, and just want to throw a couple numbers out here at you, Fran, and get your thoughts on some of these prospects. One of them here, Kenneth Dixon from Louisiana Tech, rushed for six touchdowns in a 56-13 win over, as Chip Kelly would say, the North Texas State Armadillos.
I love that kid. He's one of my favorite players in the draft, Kenneth Dixon. And, you know, he reminds me a lot of T.J. Yeldon a year ago from Alabama. He's got a good body, really smooth athlete. Just shows the ability to win in a number of different ways in terms of making defenders miss. He can run past you. I think he's got solid speed. And, again, top-end speed is low down on the totem pole in terms of priorities for the running back position. But the big thing with me is he's so slippery. He's got the ability to make people miss. There are times I can remember where he catches a pass in the flat, and he's a really good receiver out of the backfield and is used in a lot of different ways from that standpoint. But he caught a pass in the flat. I want to say it was against Kansas State. He made five defenders miss. It was on like a 13-yard catch. But no one in the country has more four-yard runs that make you go, wow, than Kenneth Dixon. And just the ability to make people miss, he'll run through you as well, and he shows the ability to run with power. The big question I had coming into the year was pass protection. I thought he's come along, and there was a lot of plays in the Kansas State game this year where I thought that he showed ability to hold up in pass pro. I'm excited to see him. You know, I'm assuming he's going to be down at the Senior Bowl because he's the best senior running back in the country. Really excited to see him in person.
All right, another running back. We talked about Illinois receiver Geronimo Allison a moment ago. How about Josh Ferguson, who had 133 yards on just 12 carries, averaged 11.2 yards per carry in a 34-point win over Purdue?
Yeah, Ferguson coming into the year, you know, I saw him as a feature back in a pass-heavy system there in Illinois. Played in a bit of a rotation in 2014. I don't necessarily see a feature back at the next level, but he's got definite third-down value. You know, he ran a good amount of zone scheme at Illinois. Didn't display a great feel in those zone runs. I think he's more of a gap scheme guy. I thought he was a really good receiver out of the backfield. He gains yards because he's got some juice in his legs. He's quick. He's got the speed to get to the corner. He's got the wiggle to make people miss in a phone booth. To me, I think he's a good rotational player right now, a good third down type of back if he can just get a little bit better in pass protection. But I like Ferguson. I wouldn't be surprised to see him down in Mobile at the Senior Bowl either.
All right, so we've talked about some of the elite receivers in college football. How about Corey Coleman from Baylor? 216 receiving yards, second career 200-yard game. 7 out of 8 games, he's gone for over 100 yards this season. He has 2 or more touchdowns in 7 straight games.
So it's just the production is just silly. I mean, it's crazy the numbers that he's putting up, video game numbers, to be sure. He's got great physical tools because he's got the explosive speed. He's got the natural quickness. He's able to separate with ease consistently. He's got strong hands. He's able to win up at the catch point in the big man's game, and he can win in the small man's game. He's just so – and this has just been my thing with these Baylor receivers – they're just so tough to watch sometimes because, you know, plays that go away, you know, they kind of like walk through the route, you know, it doesn't offer much as a blocker. If he feels like he's not getting the ball, it's almost like a playoff. And so, you know, and those are the kind of things that just kind of drive me nuts. I think, you know, there's just lots of different things, whether it's in his stance, his releases off the line of scrimmage, whether he's consistently running routes, especially when the ball is going away. You know, I think he's just got to clean some things up. But, you know, talent-wise, everything's there. It's just when you want to, like, try and narrow the gap between a guy like Corey Coleman and Tyler Boyd, you know, those are the things that kind of make the separation for me.
So is Boyd your number one receiver?
To me right now, yeah, I would say it's Boyd. You know, and again, there's still a good amount of work to be done. But right now, for me, it's Boyd.
Very, very interesting. You're definitely in the minority on that opinion.
I would
at
say
at least from the expert standpoint, the people who cover this on a week-in, week-out basis. So it'll be interesting to see what the professionals think, the scouts and the team evaluators think when draft season comes around. So that's going to do it for Draft Buzz. Now let's transition to Pick 6.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
All right, for this week's Pick 6, you know, now that the first set of college football playoff rankings have come out, we had separation Saturday. I asked Fran, I was like, who are some of the players we may not be talking about this moment because maybe their teams are out of the chase, but they could play a big role as a spoiler, so to speak, down the stretch. So, Fran, you gave me the names, so I'll let you delve into them deeply here. But we're going to start with a quarterback who generated a lot of hype a year ago. You know, maybe I think he would have been considered one of the Heisman favorites coming into this season, but he's kind of fallen off the radar. That's Dak Prescott from Mississippi State. You look at the numbers, though, almost 2,400 passing yards, 18 touchdowns, just one interception. this year for the Bulldogs.
And that's the most important part for me, is that he really lowered the interception total. You know, they lost a number of guys on defense last year. They lost their leading rusher in Josh Robinson. They returned Darunya Wilson, who's the clearly one of the best receivers in college football. But they lost a lot in that Mississippi State team. So they're not in that national spotlight right now. And they really haven't had too many big games against big competition yet. So that's the other thing that's hurting them. But they play Alabama here coming up soon. And, you know, you give Prescott the ability here to play spoiler, you know, in a spot where they're going to play Alabama. Alabama, that's probably the toughest game left on their schedule, because they've got Auburn as well before the SEC title game, where they'll take on Florida if they take care of business. Prescott has the chance here. If Alabama loses a game, I would be surprised if a two-loss SEC team, unless they win the SEC title, makes it in. Mm. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens there, how things shake out in the
Certainly.
SEC. But, you know, Prescott, look, he's got an NFL body. He's got the athleticism. I don't have any issues with his arm strength. He's got a stout build, physical kid. He's got quick feet, you know, coming from, after he gets the ball from the center. He's got a lot to refine, though, from the quarterback position. You know, presence in the pocket, footwork, when things get muddy, things like that. He's not an anticipation thrower right now. Took a lot of sacks a year ago, and that was an issue. We'll see what that looks like when I get to dig deeper onto him this year. But a guy that has some tools. I think he's a developmental guy. He's surely going to be a day three pick. I think it'll just be interesting to see, can he take one of these moments and have one of those Heisman type moments? Because like you said, coming into the year, a lot of people looked at him as a Heisman trophy, potential, winner at this point, and it just hasn't panned out that way.
All right, number two on the list, he was handed his first loss of the season, Connor Cook, quarterback for Michigan State. Spartans have one loss, might be out of the playoff picture at this point, but still, Cook's number is very impressive this season. Just a few more passing yards than the aforementioned Prescott, but 21 touchdowns against only 3 interceptions for him.
Yeah, and I would imagine that the Big Ten as a conference would be hoping that Michigan State doesn't run the table, just because if they run the table after losing to Nebraska, I don't know that they would make it in as a one-loss team from the Big Ten. I don't know, but losing to Nebraska, who has lost a lot of tough games this year, maybe the committee would look at that and say, hey, if some of those games went differently, Nebraska would have a better record. But Cook, we talked about it a little bit earlier. He's got good size. He doesn't have a gun, but shows great touch and command of the offense. I like the way he works in the pocket. He's under control. He's a really heady player. Again, I talked about some of those plays you saw even last night in the loss. A lot of the questions with him have been about his character. And that's the interesting part, is that, and a lot of people made some noise about, he's a 3-year starter, a quarterback, and he's not a captain.
Yeah.
How does that happen? It's very, very interesting. So I'm actually going to have somebody from Michigan State that covers the team. I'm going to have him on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast this week to talk about that. So
what a tease.
Yeah, no questions. But, Cook, I'm going to be interested to see how that breaks out, because that's going to be an interesting topic. If it was anybody else, we'd be talking about it in the same way. I'm surprised it hasn't gotten a little bit more play nationally yet, but when it's January, February, March,
yeah,
this will be one of the big topics for sure going into the draft.
I'm already looking ahead to the combine interviews, being in the room at Lucas Oil Stadium, and what the big questions will be for all the top prospects. So
somebody posted a picture. I forget who the Colts are playing today, but somebody that covers the team, it just landed in Indy.
It was Broncos.
Yeah,
it was
somebody,
Peyton Manning.
Somebody from Denver posted a picture, and it had Lucas Oil, and I was going to send it to you just because you and I have plenty of adventures there in Indy.
Certainly. All right, so number three on your list, we talked a lot about Big 12 receivers. Well, how about Sterling Shepard from Oklahoma? 826 yards, 7 touchdowns this season for the Sooners.
Yeah, and they've got a chance to knock off Baylor. I would imagine that Oklahoma, if they won out, they probably wouldn't make it in. I don't know what their resume looks like on the whole, but a tough, a really skin of their teeth win over Tennessee, another loss mixed in there. I'm not exactly sure where Oklahoma would be, but when you look at Sterling Shepard, a guy overall, I really liked a lot of what I saw from him. I watched that one game against Tennessee, competitive in all areas of the game. He's got great hands. He's got great ball skills. He can win in a number of different ways. He's got to become a better route runner. But if and when he does that, he's going to be a very productive player on the right team. He's got the right mindset for a slot receiver in the NFL. I think that's what he's going to end up being. But really excited about what he can be moving forward.
All right. We'll stay in the Big 12 here. Nebraska defensive tackle.
Oh, you're stuck in the past.
That's our past, correct.
Nebraska is in the Big 10 now.
Correct. So my apologies for that. we'll go defense here. Malik Collins, who was a big part of the upset win over the Spartans.
Yeah, and Collins is a guy that had gotten a lot of love. And we're going to talk about two underclassmen defensive tackles coming up here. And Collins is the first one. He's gotten a lot of love. I've seen some first-round buzz about him. So I was excited to kind of dig deep and watch some of his tape from this year. 6'2", 300 pounds. Watched a couple games. And I think he's got potential to be a nose tackle down the line. I don't know if he's going to be ready for that role right away. I want to see him add some weight and continue to get a bit stronger. But regardless, I don't think he's one of those one-gap penetrators that's going to be a first-round pick. I just didn't see that to me. I think he's a run-stuffing, two-gap player that can hold up at the point of attack, make plays on the ground. I'm not a big fan of his up-and-down play personality. I thought there were a lot of plays where, you know, I would have liked to see him give a little bit more effort and try and hold up a little bit better. Overall, I think that at this stage, he's a developmental nose tackle that's going to go, you know, maybe the mid rounds, maybe. That's if he declares for the draft. He's a junior, so he should stay in school. To me, if I'm someone that's advising Malik Collins, I would say to stay in Nebraska. But I think that's where he's at right now. He's still relied on to be one of the playmakers on this Cornhuskers defense, and they have a shot. They're playing Iowa here, and Iowa again had another big win this past week. If they run the table, they're going to get in. They'll be an undefeated Big Ten team, I would imagine, would make it in. If they clean the rest of their schedule out and then win the Big Ten title game, Nebraska could give them a little bit of trouble. So it'll be interesting to watch.
All right, number five on your list, we're going to go to the Pac-12. This is a player you had spotlighted in your Saturday scouting column. I kind of looked over that knowing that he was a pick six item as well, and that's Kenny Clark, the defensive tackle, who has scored on offense this year, one carry for 3 yards and a touchdown, but obviously known for his defense. 5 tackles for loss and 2 sacks for the Bruins.
Yeah, to me, when I watched him, I was just so blown away. And again, a guy that's starting to get some first-round buzz. I know Mel Kiper has been pretty big on him over the last couple months or so. To me, I looked at him, I said, no question, he's a starting NFL defensive lineman. He's got great bend in his knees. He's got the ability to stay low. He anchors really well at the point of attack. He's a great run defender. Even just the little things, you know, his eye discipline, his ability to two-gap. He's always square to the line of scrimmage. He uses his hands really, really well. His hands are always in the right place. They all result in him being a very, very disruptive player at the point of attack. I really like his ability to defend the run. I think he shows good athleticism as well. A number of plays where, you know, it wasn't outstanding bursts. He wasn't like we talked about Jahad Ward, where he makes some of those freakish plays, the kid from Illinois. But he's just so quick, and, you know, he shows really good change of direction. He's very light on his feet. I really liked Kenny Clark. To me, you know, I think he's in that top 20, top 25 range as a run-defending defensive tackle.
All right, so last but not least, and this was the team, North Carolina, with its role in the ACC that made me think of the whole spoiler aspect, because everyone probably is thinking at this point Clemson is going to run a table and they're going to make their way into the college football playoff. A team with something to say, the Tar Heels of North Carolina, and you want to spotlight wide receiver Ryan Switzer, who has 35 catches for 535 yards and 4 touchdowns, also has a punt return touchdown on the season.
Yeah, 5'10", 185 pounds. And again, this is the chance for him to play spoiler here, UNC. If they make it to the ACC title game, going up against Clemson. You know, I haven't studied Switzer yet. Every time I've watched North Carolina, this kid makes plays. And, you know, he shows good quickness. He flashes good hands. Our good friend Tony Pauline, the people he talks to, say that they're very, very high on him as a potential slot receiver in the NFL. So I'm excited to dig deeper into him. He's no question he's the biggest playmaker on this offense. Quarterback Marquise Williams kind of leads the show, and he had a huge week this past week. Switzer's the guy to watch, though, on that offense.
All right, so that's going to do it for Pick 6 possible spoilers when it comes to the college football playoff rankings. Now we're going to transition to, last but not least, draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, it's time for the draft mailbag. So we're going to go through some of your questions on Twitter, whether draft-related, Eagles draft-related, whatever. We will tackle them all. And first one, we'll start off. This is a good one. This comes from our good friend, Oh Wow Hmm, on Twitter, who goes by the name this week of Byron Johns, as the Eagles get ready to play the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. He wants to know your take, Fran, on guys with inaccurate measurables, because that's always a fun topic. And you've been to the weigh-ins at the Shrine Game, Senior Bowl. You could better describe what that atmosphere is like when these guys get on stage and representatives from every team are sitting there, and there's signs when there's, you know, audible gasps and surprises when a guy who is listed by his college at 5'11", let's say, all of a sudden checks in and he's 5'8".
Yeah, and that definitely happens. And to me, I think that there's certain measurements at each position that are most important. And look, colleges are well within their right. If they want to say a guy's 5'10 and he's actually 5'8 and they want to put that on their site, I mean, it is what it is. There's nothing that, you know, the NFL can do. There's nothing that anybody else can do to stop them from doing that. I'm sure the player enjoys that little boost.
Of course.
You know, throughout his college career until, you know, the real measurement comes out in the spring. But, you know, I think that it just depends on the position. You know, you look at a quarterback, you know, the height is typically the thing that has bothered a lot of people in terms of quarterbacks. If a guy's 6 foot or under, you know, now you're kind of knocking him down the board a little bit. Hand size as well, and that's something that people have looked at in the past, is whether or not a guy can throw it pretty well. Is it, you know, well, what is his hand size like? You know, you look at defensive linemen and arm length. You look at corners and arm length. You start looking at running backs and their hand size, and you know, how well do they hold onto the football? Receivers catching the football with their hands. I mean, there's all little kinds of different things that you look at with each position. We've taught even in the past. Now that knee circumference is coming into the play with defensive linemen and how much weight they can further take on to become bigger and, you know, develop into something in the NFL. It's very, very interesting to see all these different measurables. To me, it's not something that the measurement, it is what it is. I'm not, you can't knock the player too much. You know, it's like if he's listed by his college as being 6 foot and he's 5'9", you know, it's like, all right, well, it's not the player's fault, but end of the day, he's 5'9". I mean, you have to, it's a new piece of information. You got to affect the grade with it, and then you move on. But I'll be interested to see who are the guys that come out. I think there are some out there right now that some guys are maybe listed a little bit taller than they usually are. Some guys who look, the other big thing is the arm length and hand size, and those things aren't typically made public knowledge at this point in the process. Now when you get down to January and you get to February at the combine, and that stuff starts to come out, you'll see some people say, oh, wow, you know, this corner's got 34.5-inch arms. I mean, that's outstanding. You know, a guy like we talked about, DeAndre Howell, I think his arm length is going to be one of those things that people go, oh, man, this kid has got a great upside, you know, and that's going to happen.
Are there schools that you've realized who are they're good at it,
right?
They're accurate with it, that whatever it says on their media guide, their website, is typically what's going to be?
You know, I want to say I know some that are bad. I think of the ones that are bad with it that more so than the ones that are good with it.
Why do I think Alabama is good with it?
Alabama typically is pretty good with it.
I feel like that they're good with it.
They are. Alabama's typically good with it. I would say that Minnesota is historically not so good with it. I will say that Florida typically is not so good with it. There are a couple other schools too that I can think of that aren't so good, but it changes player, you know, case by case,
of course,
and the real numbers come out. Look, I think it was Daniel Jeremiah tweeted that Trevon Boykin is actually 5'11.5", and he's listed 6'1" or 6'2" by TCU. Those numbers creep out sometimes a little bit earlier, but they'll be out sooner or later.
How was Temple?
Pretty good. I mean, look, over the past couple of years, they haven't had too many guys to you know, it's been a small sample size, but we'll see this year because they've got like 4 or 5 prospects coming out this year.
I recall you mentioned Daniel Jeremiah, the story of Darren Sproles.
Yeah.
Of when he went up there on the podium, and I've heard Jeremiah's take on it because he was, who was he? Was he worth the Eagles at that time?
I don't believe so.
He was Baltimore at that point. Yeah, it was way before his Eagles time. But also from Sproles' account, and just Darren was like, look, I've been small all my life. It's not a surprise. This is who I am. And he was just so confident in the fact that even though he's 5'6", he owned the fact that he's 5'6", and teams were like, all right, well, if he's that confident in it, then.
I always enjoy, too, the guys that, like, at the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Game, when the weigh-in happens, and they, like, celebrate after a certain measurement. So, like, I remember Danny Shelton, because he played at, like, I want to say it was, like, 360 or something like that last fall.
Really?
And he got down to, I think it was 335 or 345, something like that, at the combine, or at the Senior Bowl. So, his weight got announced. He gave a little fist bump. It was good. I love that.
It's like the Biggest Loser.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting. It's definitely an interesting part of the process.
I mean, draft pick status is on the line, so sure. That is money. People are thinking Biggest Loser is a contest. I'm like, you know, guys in the way to,
well, that's the thing, is that
determine something.
You get into the numbers and you say, like, all right, well, how much does that really matter? But then you think, like, and this isn't as big of a deal, you know, with ESPN and NFL Network and a lot of the draft publications, but teams, they all have different formulas on trying to calculate, you know, how much force does this guy exert, and how much, you know, what is his play speed? And you start to factor in, okay, well, if he's got an arm length of this, and you look, I'm not a math guy, I don't know, but you know, you factor in the guy's size and what his 40 time is, and what his 10 yard split is, and what his three cone plus his arm, you know, you have all these different measurements. Now you can create all kinds of formulas to kind of it's another way to kind of stack these guys and try and set a board. So, you know, it goes a long way, but it's just a piece of the puzzle.
All right, the next question comes here from at A2K Hawaii. Wants to know, are the Eagles more likely to draft a quarterback in the first round or try to sign or acquire RG3 or Colin Kaepernick? Now, obviously, I'll do the spiel where I hope Sam Bradford plays well in the second half of the season and becomes the guy for this football team.
Absolutely.
So, looking down the road, I think the first thing you have to say is, when you've talked about the quarterbacks and how we don't know if there's a clear-cut guy, where the Eagles stand right now, they're hovering around 500. They're 500 with a win. Even when they were 1-3, they still had, I think, the number 8 pick in the draft at that point, because I know Lance Zierlein had an article on it.
And well, because like, and that's also because there are a lot of other teams that were also 1-3
true,
as the 16-game
yes.
season plays out.
Of course, of course. But still, even if they finish, just say 500, that's still going to be in the mid-teens.
Yeah, you're right, exactly right.
You know, so you're not going to have a chance to get, you know, the number one or number two guy. You can't just bank on, oh, well, you know, you might have X quarterback rated high, but who knows if he's going to be the guy.
How many fans wanted Mariota this year?
Certainly.
At some point, like, the other team, you can't just say, oh, yeah, we're going to just trade up for him.
Yeah.
You know, because it takes two to tango. You need a team to trade up for.
And that's why they went and made the trade for Bradford. Now, looking at these guys, I think RG3, you have to factor in the contract with him as being a first-round pick. I know Kaepernick signed an extension that reportedly makes it very team-friendly. I don't know what the evaluations are on those guys or what it would take to get them or whether the teams want to move on. I mean, certainly you would say, I'm sure Washington would want to move on for Griffin, you know, but at what cost? And the Niners, they've benched Kaepernick. Is that a situation where, look, Blaine Gabbert is not going to be the future of that franchise? Do they just do this as a sort of a la Donovan McNabb in 2008? Sit him down, give him a fresh perspective, and get him back in there. I don't know. So
it's funny. I was having this conversation with somebody this week, and not necessarily about the Eagles, but just in general terms, because we were talking about this quarterback class,
yeah.
And just how there are a good amount of guys that could come in potentially and, you know, be deemed as a future starter. How many teams are really going to be looking for that? And you still have to take into account that free agency in this whole process takes place before the draft. So you look at guys like RG3 and Kaepernick, you know, a Jay Cutler, with Sean Payton potentially being out in New Orleans, where will Drew Brees end up being? There are lots of different players that could potentially be moving around in the NFL.
True.
And then you take into account all these potential quarterbacks that could go high in the draft. The Paxton, you know, you, just off the top of your head, Paxton Lynch, Connor Cook, Christian Hackenberg, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff. That's six guys right there, not even counting, you know, the Cody Kesslers of the world, the Cardale Joneses of the world. You know, all these players here, Zach Mettenberger, you know, would Zach Mettenberger get dealt for a team that's looking for a quarterback right now? It'll be very interesting to see how it all pans out. There's a lot of potential quarterbacks coming up in this draft.
I'm hoping Sam Bradford just throws for 400 yards. Eagles blow out the Cowboys.
And you don't have to worry about it.
We're on cloud nine. All right, last question here comes from at Dexon7 on Twitter. Wants to know, will the fast-paced offense be a thing of the past as other teams figure out the plays? So, obviously, it's a very philosophical question, but the thing is, you're still seeing it at the college level. So, certainly, that's going to, I think, continue to influence a pro level. And to me, I think it's a philosophical foundation of what Chip Kelly likes to do. I think the plays have been there to be had. It's, yes, have teams had an idea of what the Eagles run? Certainly. And there have been some formation tendencies. But as Fran, I think, does a great job of explaining in his Eagle Eye in the Sky text column, that the Eagles have made adjustments of their own to kind of offset that. And I think as all these new pieces come together, it's really a case of, if the Eagles can just get a first down here, first down there, you know, I go back just looking at that first matchup with Dallas, first three drives of that game for the offense. It was an ugly game overall for the offense, but on the first three drives, they had a 3rd-and-1 situation that they didn't convert. They tried, you know, an intermediate pass that was incomplete. Jordan Matthews on a 3rd-and-8 dropped a pass right at the sticks, and then Miles Austin on another 3rd down was open, balls in his hands, couldn't come up with the play. If you just make a couple of these plays, you're able to consistently move the chains and you're able to get that fast-paced offense going. So,
no question.
I don't think we've seen the tempo that Chip Kelly wants. I certainly think he's had to adjust from that standpoint. But to me, I don't think it's – the reason for the struggle is because teams have so much figured out. It's just the Eagles, and I'll bring up the word, have not executed.
Sure. And I think, too, that – and there's the other thing that goes into this question is – when you play at a fast pace, you can afford to be a little bit more simplistic in what you do and be a little bit more predictable, quote unquote, because when you're operating at a fast pace, you know, if you've run off three plays in 60 seconds, the defense isn't sitting there. They've got their hands on their knees. They got their hands on their hips. They're not thinking, oh, they're lining up in this formation. It's very tough for all 11 guys on the other team to be able to line up and say before the snap, oh, they're in this formation. Typically when they're in this formation, this down and distance with this personnel grouping, they usually run this concept in this direction. I mean, it's tough to process that. Yeah. So you can get away with being a little bit more predictable from that standpoint. And that's what has helped the Eagles over the course of the past couple of years under Chip Kelly is that, you know, when you operate at a high pace, you can be a little bit more simplistic in what you do in terms of for the offense, you're running the same concepts, but defensively, you know, you're looking at it and you've got the tempo, but then also the different formations, the different personnel groupings, and the Eagles still do that. So that's one of the things, if the Eagles can just get things going and start putting one foot in front of the other, so to speak, and start stringing some of these plays together, now you've got something cooking here offensively in both the run and pass game. I'll be interested to see what happens over the last 8 games.
All right, so great stuff there from you, the fans. Thank you very much for the questions. Fran, I think that's going to do it for us.
Yes.
So it's another edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Again, make sure to subscribe wherever you consume podcasts and make sure to rate and comment and to let us know what you want to hear on future podcasts. For Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. You've been listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.